This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
In this edition today, our bulletin of church news that continues to look at the legacy of the late Pope Francis. That will be followed by Panorama and then our feature of Echo of the African Synod. Today we shall close with a segment dedicated to Millennium Appointment. My name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. The College of Cardinals on Monday held their 10th General Congregation, during which all but one cardinal electors were present. According to the director of the Holy See Press Office, Matteo Bruni, the cardinals discussed realities that evolved around the central theme of the life and mission of the Church today. Devin Watkins reports.
The director of the Holy See Press Office, Matteo Bruni, told reporters on Monday that 179 cardinals, including 132 cardinal electors, participated in the 10th General Congregation. He noted that all 133 cardinal electors are present in Rome ahead of the conclave that starts on May 7th. Cardinal Giovanni Battista Re, Dean of the College of Cardinals, updated the congregation on their sleeping arrangements for the conclave. Cardinal Camerlengo Kevin Farrell drew lots on Saturday afternoon for their room assignments. All will be accommodated at the Casa Santa Marta and the Old Santa Marta. The cardinal electors, said Mr. Bruni, will be able to travel from the Casa Santa Marta to the Sistine Chapel as they wish, even on foot, but noted they will follow a protected route. There were 26 interventions at the congregation on Monday morning on topics ranging from canon law, the Church's missionary nature, to the importance of caritas in defending the poor. Some of the cardinals highlighted the presence of so many journalists in Rome. They said it is a sign that the gospel has meaning for the world today as a call to responsibility. Others recalled the Pope's Statio Orbis during the COVID-19 pandemic, calling it an open door of hope in a time of fear. They also spoke about the man they will elect, Pope, saying he needs to be a shepherd close to the people, a gateway to communion who gathers everyone in the blood of Christ in a world where the global order is in crisis. The cardinals also discussed the challenges of transmitting the faith, caring for creation, and denouncing war. Mr. Bruni said all efforts are being made during the general congregations to ensure that all cardinals who wish to speak have the opportunity to do so. Work has been completed in the Sistine Chapel as well as in the accommodations at the two Casa Santa Martas, and cardinals may check in as of Tuesday morning. Journalists said Mr. Bruni will not be able to visit the Sistine Chapel since the Vatican Gendarmerie have already secured it. However, he noted images will be released showing the prepared interior. I'm Devin Watkins.
As we have heard, the Vatican has said that everything is all set for the start of the process to choose the successor of the late Pope Francis. Linda Bodoni takes us through the figures and historicity about this year's conclave that starts on Wednesday, 7th May.
There are 27 veteran cardinals of this conclave, 22 created by Pope Benedict XVI and 5 by Pope St. John Paul II. The other three-quarters of those who will cast their ballots, 108 in all, were appointed by Pope Francis, who significantly reshaped the body, making it a lot more international. Not only is this perhaps a sign of the times, but it reflects Francis's shift of the centre of gravity towards the global south, with a focus on the peripheries. Thus, 15 nations will be represented by their native cardinal electors for the first time. Europe, however, still carries significant weight in the College of Cardinals, with the Old Continent represented by 53 of them, of which 19 are Italian, 6 French and 5 Spanish. 37 cardinal electors hail from the Americas, 23 from Asia, 18 from Africa and 4 from Oceania. Regarding the age of the electors, the youngest cardinal in the college is the Ukrainian-born Australian, Mikola Bichok, who is 45, while the oldest is the Spaniard, Carlos Osora Sierra at 79. 33 of them belong to 18 different religious orders, with the Salesians most represented. Of the 135 cardinals eligible to vote, two have confirmed they will not be able to attend the conclave for health reasons, bringing the total down to 133. I'm Linda Bordoni.
And as the Catholic faithful and the people of goodwill intensify their prayers for the cardinal electors, Nigerian-born Cardinal Francis Arinze has said that the success of Pope Francis should be full of fire for the kingdom of Christ, spreading the gospel. Cardinal Arinze was speaking to Arch Catholic News Agency as the process to choose a new pope nears its beginning. 92-year-old Arinze was created cardinal by Pope St. John Paul II in 1985. He attended the final session of the Second Vatican Council as the youngest bishop in the world at the time, and later served more than two decades in the Roman Curia. He took part in the conclave that elected Benedict XVI in 2005. For Arinze, who has served as a bishop for 60 years and 40 years as cardinal, the next success of St. Peter must above all be a witness to Christ, a pope whose life is powerful. Given his age, Arinze will not be inside the Sistine Chapel when the conclave begins, but he, along with other cardinals over the age of 80, have been taking part in the general congregation discussions about the church and the world ahead of the conclave. No pope is a photocopy of another pope, Arinze said, and prayed that the Holy Spirit be with the cardinal electors, on whose shoulders rests the responsibility to give the church and the world at large a new pope. We should just pray for a pope that would guide the church as Jesus desires, he insisted. It is almost 2 weeks since the death of Pope Francis. Among the many things he is going to be remembered for are the specific prayer intentions for each month of the year. These intentions are the Pope's appeal to encourage the faithful to deepen their daily prayer life and be in touch with certain realities of life. Just before he met his death on April 21st, the prayer intention of Pope Francis was that through work, each person might find fulfillment, that families might be sustained in dignity, and that society might be humanized. When he passed on, the Pope's Worldwide Prayer Network, the organization that works to encourage Christians to respond to the Pope's prayer intentions, expanded it further to include the appeals of his predecessors, Pope Benedict XVI and Pope St. John Paul II, on the same theme, calling on the church to pray for working conditions. Deborah Lubav has more.
Before passing away on Easter Monday, the 21st of April, Pope Francis had expressed his wish that the church pray during the month of May for working conditions. Due to his passing away, the format for the video accompanying this prayer intention has changed and offers the faithful words on this theme from the last three popes, late Pope Francis, Benedict XVI, and Pope St. John Paul II. Accompanying the Pope's words are images that combine different lived experiences revolving around the world of work. The Pope video for May invites us to pray that through work, each person might find fulfillment, families might be sustained in dignity, and society might be humanized. Moreover, in this moment of history, the Pope's Worldwide Prayer Network says it entrusts the mission of the next pope to the Lord and continues its apostolic work, praying for the challenges of humanity and the Church's mission. The video recalls Pope Francis's words during a 2022 general audience, remembering when the evangelists Matthew and Mark refer to Joseph as a carpenter. Jesus, he noted, practiced his father's trade, which was a pretty hard job. From an economic point of view, he continued, it did not ensure great earnings. This biographical fact about Joseph and Jesus, he noted, made him think of all the workers in the world. Work, Pope Francis had added, anoints our dignity. And what gives you dignity, he said, is not bringing bread home. What gives you dignity is earning your bread. Next, the video turns to late Pope Benedict XVI, remembering when he addressed all workers on the Feast of St. Joseph in 2006, and stressed that work is of fundamental importance to the fulfillment of the human being and to the development of society. The video turns to late Pope St. John Paul II and his remarks when celebrating the Jubilee of Workers in the Jubilee Year of 2000. He said, "The Jubilee Year calls us for a rediscovery of the meaning and value of work, and that it is also an invitation to address the economic and social imbalances in the world of work by reestablishing the right hierarchy of values. I'm Deborah Castellano-Lubov.
You are tuned to the Daily Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
The top United Nations court on Monday dismissed a case brought by Sudan accusing the United Arab Emirates of breaching the Genocide Convention by arming and funding the Rebel Paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, or RSF, in Sudan's deadly civil war. Judges found that the International Court of Justice lacked the authority to continue the proceedings. In March, Sudan asked the court based in The Hague for several orders known as provisional measures, including telling the United Arab Emirates to do all it can to prevent the killing and other crimes targeting the Masalit people in Darfur. The UAE called the filing a publicity stunt and, in a hearing last month, argued the court had no jurisdiction. Sudan descended into a deadly conflict in mid-April 2023 when long simmering tensions between its military and the RSF forces broke out in the capital Khartoum and spread to other regions. Rwanda's foreign minister has said his country is in the early stages of talks to receive immigrants deported from the United States. Olivier Nduhungirehe said this in an interview aired on television late on Sunday. After he was sworn in January, President Donald Trump launched a sweeping crackdown on immigration and attempted to freeze the U.S. refugee resettlement program. His administration has pushed aggressively to deport immigrants who are in the country illegally or other non-citizens. Rwanda has in recent years positioned itself as a destination country for migrants that Western countries would like to remove, despite concerns by rights groups that Kigali does not respect some of the most fundamental human rights. The government in Kigali signed an agreement with Britain in 2022 to take in thousands of asylum seekers from the United Kingdom before the deal was scrapped last year by then newly elected Prime Minister Keir Starmer. You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
The African Synod, the Church Alive in Africa Today.
Hello and welcome to the program. I am Festus Tarawali. The family is often described as a domestic church because it is considered the primary place where faith is learned and lived. Through the example and teachings of their parents, children are first introduced to the faith in their families, and in Africa, this can sometimes happen through extended family structures. By creating a supportive environment where faith is lived and taught, families can inspire their children to consider a vocation to the priesthood or to religious life. Our guest in this edition is newly ordained deacon Theogenes Madushi, who hails from the Archdiocese of Mwanza in Tanzania. He came to our studios on the eve of his ordination this past Saturday, and I began by asking him about how his journey to the priesthood began, or when he started discerning his call to be a priest.
Thank you very much for this opportunity. My name is Theogenes Petro Madushi. I'm a seminarian from the Archdiocese of Mwanza in Tanzania. And now I'm pursuing my theological studies in licentiate at the University of Urbaniana, and at the same time pursuing my priestly formation at the Pontifical College of Urban. I'm very happy to be here with you. I can say it is difficult to precisely say when I decided to follow this vocation or to begin living this vocation. But because vocation is a call, it has its background. So the background of my vocation, I can say it began since when I was still young. So the formation from my family, because we used to pray together, even in prayers. And this, it is the kind of formation that I received from my parents, which slowly built up my vocation. So the journey precisely, maybe I can say, from the time when I joined the seminary, because I did not do a minor seminary. I joined just only after my advanced level. I entered in the formation house. Then after some months, I joined the major seminary. So it is like the preparation for this vocation, it began in my family. That's why we say family, it is just like domestic church. I thank my mom, my mother, because every evening before going to bed, we are supposed to pray. So we prayed, we used to have evening prayers. That one also, it involved another family, as a friend, family friend. So we gathered, we used to gather together, we pray the rosary. So these parents, they used to give us the chance, we children, to lead the prayers. So we had the duty to lead the rosary, even other evening prayers. So slowly, we became used with this lifestyle of prayers, because at that time I was not even baptized, because I was baptized when I was when I had 11 years. So that experience, I can say, it contributed much to my vocation. When I went now to, I began the catechumen. It is where I encountered other people. We used to share, even the assistance of my catechist who taught me the catechism. They elaborated a lot of things that became the foundation also of my vocation.
You've just explained that you started your formation to the priesthood or as a seminarian, not at the minor seminary, but you joined at the major seminary. Was it difficult for you to fit in?
No, it was not difficult, but previously, before I came to know that it is possible to join the major seminary even without passing through minor seminary, because at the beginning, I didn't have that knowledge. I never knew that if it is possible. So I had a kind of fear because I'm going to encounter those who pass through the minor seminary, and we have a lot of features and characteristics of those who pass through the minor seminary, that they are more intelligent and like that. So it was just a kind of fear to me, because I felt, how am I going to begin this journey with those whom I have never met? And in that circumstance now, I took courage, and I thank God also, even though I passed through this public school, and it was a day school. It was not even a boarding. It was a day school. So, and it is found in the village. It is not even town where maybe you can, there is this electricity supply. So it was a bit difficult to me, but my journey, I can say, it has been illuminated by God, surely.
So after your studies here in Rome, you're going back to Mwanza to be ordained eventually.
Yes. Because this one, it depends also with the program of our college. Since, as I have said, now I'm doing the licentiate in dogmatic theology, and I'm the first year of my studies. So after my studies, I hope it will be the next year. So I will finish my studies, then I will have to go back in my diocese. So the programs for ordination, priestly ordination, it will depend with my archbishop.
You definitely would like to thank a few people maybe that have contributed, you know, to this journey of yours.
Yes, just I would like to thank my bishop, Archbishop Renatus Leonard Nkwande, and my vocation director, even all priests of the Archdiocese of Mwanza, and my formators at Peramiho Major Seminary, where I began my priestly journey. Thank you very much for your prayers and for your support. My bishop, Leonardo Sinkwande, I would just like to thank him because for his paternal love and for accepting my request when I wrote the letter asking for to be ordained. He accepted, so I would like to thank him. And I'm kindly just ask for his prayer because I'm still in the journey toward priesthood. Thank you very much, and God bless you.
That was newly ordained deacon Theogenes Madushi from the Archdiocese of Mwanza in Tanzania. And that's all for this edition of the African Synod, The Church Alive in Africa Today. Till the same time next week, I am Festus Tarawali.
You are welcome to this week's edition of Millennium Appointment. The congregation of the Daughters of St. Paul, commonly referred to as the Pauline Sisters, was blessed last Friday with the admission of three of their members in Kenya to the final vows. The three took the vows in a colorful liturgy at St. Paul Westlands premises in Nairobi, presided over by the Bishop of the Catholic Diocese of Isiolo, the Right Reverend Peter Makau. We have a detailed report by one of the Daughters of St. Paul.
A profound sense of joy and spiritual commitment filled the air on Friday, May 2nd, 2025, as three young women, Sisters Angela Mwinzi, Sister Clementine Maundu, and Sister Elizabeth Masaku, who hail from the Catholic dioceses of Kitui and Machakos respectively, made their perpetual profession as Daughters of St. Paul. The ceremony held in Nairobi was graced by the presence of the Bishop of the Catholic Diocese of Isiolo, the Most Reverend Peter Munguti Makau, a consulate and missionary who delivered a soul-searching homily emphasizing the profound significance of their definitive yes. In his address to Sister Angela, Sister Clementine, and Sister Elizabeth, Bishop Makau highlighted the gravity and beauty of their lifelong commitment. He reminded the sisters that their definitive yes was a profound act of entrusting their entire being to Christ and his mission. Their yes, he stated, echoed their resolve to witness in a world often searching for truth and meaning. The bishop called upon the newly perpetually professed sisters to be courageous and creative in their apostolic endeavors. Humility in their life and mission was key, he said. The higher you go, the humbler you must become. He emphasized the ever-evolving nature of communication and challenged them to embrace new technologies and innovative approaches to reach all corners of the earth with the good news. Their dedication to utilizing media, he noted, placed them at the forefront of modern evangelization, making them vital instruments in building bridges of understanding and faith. Bishop Makau encouraged the sisters to bloom where they are planted in obedience to God's will and avoid unnecessary complaints. Furthermore, Bishop Makau highlighted the importance of their communal life and their steadfast commitment to prayer. He reminded them that their strength and effectiveness in their mission would be deeply rooted in their relationship with Christ and their support for one another. Their life of consecration, marked by the vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience, serves as a reminder to counter witness to the fleeting values of the world, offering a compelling vision of a life lived in selfless service. He spoke about the poor man's charism, the call to communicate the gospel with the same passion and creativity as St. Paul himself. The Daughters of St. Paul are a religious congregation of women dedicated to spreading the gospel message through the means of social communication. Founded by Blessed James Aldeone, their unique mission involves utilizing every form of media, from print and audiovisual in digital platforms, to bring the light of Christ to the world. Reporting for Vatican News, Sister Rosalyn Wambani Wafula.
And lastly, the government of Rwanda has begun the repatriation of its citizens who were trafficked to Southeast Asia. By the weekend, 10 had already arrived in the country from Myanmar. A government spokesperson, Yolande Makolo, said on Saturday that dozens of Rwandan nationals had been trafficked to countries like Myanmar and Laos by online criminals on social media who promised them well-paying jobs and heaven on earth. Ms. Makolo said the repatriation is being carried out in partnership with the International Organization for Migration. Reports from Thailand say hundreds of Africans have been trafficked to Myanmar and other Southeastern Asian countries to work in online scam centers where they are treated inhumanly. Majority would like to return to their home countries, but cannot because they have no money and their passports have been confiscated by the traffickers. And with that, we come to the end of this week's edition of Millennium Appointment. This has been Johnny Baptist Tumusime.
This is the Africa Service of Vatican Radio, and I am Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.